You are listening to a sermon by Heather Murray, recorded on Sunday, September 14th, 2025, at Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgrmf.org.
Hi, everyone. It's good to see all of you. The other day, I woke up with a frog in my throat, so I'm a little bit more rustic sounding. It was so nice to arrive here and to see like recognizable pieces from our previous location. It was really like touching to see you forget about something until you see it again, and there it is. And so that's really special. Okay. A key component of today's story is siblings and sibling dynamics. So I'm going to open up my talk with a story about my siblings. I haven't asked them if they're comfortable with me sharing this story because I'm the youngest and the rules don't apply to me. My family order goes, oldest is sister, then there's a brother, and then me. So one breezy summer afternoon, I was sitting on a dock at Cultus Lake with my sister and the younger of the two brothers, just taking in the view of the mountains, feeling the warmth of the wood under the of the dock, and watching the ripples on the lake. Out of nowhere, my brother breaks the silence and asks, "Hey, Heather, have you ever done magic mushrooms?" And I look back and I look around for my parents and I say, "Yes." And we launch into a rip-roaring conversation about psychedelics, what they do, how they can be used therapeutically, and what are the ethical implications of using them. And we were off to the races. But as we talked, I couldn't help but notice my sister's face falling, getting stormy, then furrowed. Then she made these noises like, "Ah." I thought, uh-oh, my sister is super mad at me, maybe thinking that what I did was unethical. So I paused the conversation and said, "Hey, you look pretty mad right now." And she said the last thing I expected her to say. She said, "Why do you get to do everything? I followed all the rules and did what everyone else said was the right thing to do, and you just do whatever you want." I was completely shocked, and I didn't know what to say. After a while, we switched topics, and we went back to staring at the mountains in silence. I couldn't get her response out of my mind. There was this fractional moment sitting on the dock where I thought, am I the prodigal son who's loved in the family even though I do crazy things? And my sister's the angry son who stayed? What does this story even mean? And why was the older son so angry? I'm gonna do this for my voice now for a sec. The prodigal son has vexed me ever since I was a child. I don't get it. And I'm not buying what my Sunday school teacher had to say. According to her, the prodigal son was sinful but came back to God, and the remaining son should have been happy because he gets to work with his dad, aka God, all the time. I'm thinking, come on. Clearly, running away to the city to blow wads of cash on parties and then returning to another huge party with gifts and singing and dancing like nothing ever happened, that's the way better option. That remaining son has every right to be mad. Where are his parties? You think it's a reward to stay put and work all day and not have fun? Please. Again, I am a youngest child. And to be honest, the interpretation of the prodigal son didn't get an upgrade in my mind. I avoided the story because I just don't get it. But the thing about being asked to talk at Point Grey is that for whatever reason, my first instinct is to decide to talk about something that I can't wrap my head around. So when I got asked to speak, I knew what I was going to tackle. So let's dig in. First of all, as a minor point of interest, I thought that prodigal meant to return home with your tail between your legs, shameful of your bad choices. But prodigal means spending money lavishly and without thought. Money just flows through the prodigal son's fingers like sand. Secondly, I was chatting with this parable, chatting about this parable with my dad the other day, and he pointed out something that I had previously overlooked. Which is when the prodigal son asks for his share of the inheritance, his dad divides the property and he gives both sons their share. Both of them. The dad does not give the prodigal son his payout and then withhold the other son's share. And he doesn't wait for the older brother to ask for it too. He's given it freely. At the start of this parable, both brothers have piles of money to do with whatever they will. Put a pin in this because it comes back later. So the prodigal son goes off and spends it all. He falls prey to the exact same things we struggle with now: materialism. New stuff, new parties, and new people give him that temporary dopamine shot of excitement. But a new outfit isn't new anymore once you've worn it 5 times. And a $1,000 ring doesn't make you happy 10 times longer than a $100 ring. And before long, the money is gone. He knows hunger, and he realizes those friends were only there for his money. And his dad is a decent guy, so maybe he can get a job back at home. And what does the other son do with his equal share of his inheritance? Seemingly nothing. He stays at home, he works all day. He does what he thinks his father wants him to do. And I'll tell another story, this time about a relative of mine. And I'll keep this neutral and anonymous because I have compassion for this person, and there must be a reason why they see the world this way. So at one of my extended family gatherings, with way too much food, lots of laughter, and catching up, I get chatting with this relative. This person is absolutely loaded. They've done very well financially. So they're asking me about a recent trip I went on, and I'm sharing about my fun adventures, the delicious food, the incredible sights. And they sigh and say, "Must be nice. I wish I could travel." And I ask, "Oh, why can't you?" And they say, "Well, someone has to stay home and take care of my parents. I couldn't possibly leave them." At this point, I think this is a logistics problem. And I say, "You can totally go traveling. Your parents are in supportive care. All their needs are met. And they're not seriously ill, they're just older. And you have a bunch of siblings in town who visit your parents all the time, too. I'm sure that a 2-week holiday will be no big deal. You should go." And here I'm thinking, I fixed it. My relative shakes their head and sighs and looks to the heavens. Clearly, Heather does not understand. They simply cannot go anywhere or enjoy life, because duty keeps them bound to home. And what is this? A self-limiting belief? A fear of stepping out of a chosen role? An inability to see that this prison you feel you're in is of your own making? And whatever it is, we see it in the older brother who stays. Returning to our parable, we're now in this scene where the prodigal son has returned. Dad is ordering a feast, he's throwing a party. There's hustle and bustle, all hands on deck, getting ready. And when I was writing this, I was using the Message as the translation, so I'll use the Message here. I think it's a slightly different than what Evan was writing, so it kind of comes out more in this one. So meanwhile, all this time, his older brother was out in the field. When the day's work was done, he came in. As he approached the house, he heard music and dancing. Calling over one of the houseboys, he asked what was going on. He told him, "Your brother came home. Your father ordered a feast, barbecued beef, because he has him home safe and sound." What I imagine happening here is that the older brother knew exactly what was going on. I'm gonna take another drink. He knew exactly what was going on while he was working out in the field. How could all this preparation, hubbub, and celebration not have reached his ears by now? Someone must have ran out and told him at the very least, so I'm not buying it. My interpretation is that he's doing the ancient Middle Eastern version of rage cleaning. Have you just asked if you haven't heard of what rage cleaning is? It's when you're doing chores and you're furious because you think you're the only person who does anything around here. You've got a rag in your hand and you're scrubbing with fury, and your inner voice is saying, "Why am I the only person around here who cleans this pigsty? No one appreciates how hard I work, and everyone else just sits around and does nothing while I'm out here keeping everything together." So this older brother knows his younger brother is back. He knows there's a party and everyone's having fun, but he's out in the field choosing to finish his not an emergency chores instead of running into his brother's arms because he's resentful. He's out there scything with a fury, thinking, "All I do is work, 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 and my dad doesn't even care. He's too busy watching the road for my irresponsible, no good, flaky, spendthrift of a brother who doesn't do anything right to finally come home. Doesn't he see what I do? Here I am working my tail off, and no one sees how much I sacrifice. How come I never get a feast, huh? Where's my party for my friends?" And he basically says as much to his dad when he finally can't put it off anymore and he drags himself to the party. Oop. Oh, yeah, I have to read from here now. I got lost. Okay. So I'll read this section from the Message because it was a lot to type out. The older brother stalked off in an angry sulk and refused to join in. His father came out and tried to talk to him, but he wouldn't listen. The son said, "Look how many years I've stayed here serving you, never giving you one moment of grief. But have you ever thrown a party for me and my friends? Then this son of yours who has flown away with your money, sorry, who has thrown away your money on whores, shows up and you go all out with a feast." His father said, "Son, you don't understand. You're with me all the time, and everything that is mine is yours. But this is a wonderful time, and we had to celebrate. This brother of yours was dead, and he's alive. He was lost, and he's found." So my Sunday school teacher would conclude that the reward for the older son doing the right thing by staying home to work is that he gets to be, oh, I'm totally muddling my words. I'm going to start right from the beginning of this sentence. Okay. My childhood Sunday school teacher would conclude that the reward for the older son doing the right thing is that he gets to be around the father, aka symbolically God, this whole time. And that's even better than partying in the city. But that's not where I'm going with this. Remember, This older son has his inheritance. We put a pin in that, so let's talk about it. The brothers started this story with the same amount of money. The father says, "You're with me all the time, and everything that is mine is yours." It's like, why are you here all the time? Why do you feel you can't go anywhere? Why do you believe you can't slaughter an animal and have a feast for your friends? Why are you waiting for someone else to throw you a party when you literally own fatted cows and can choose to hire musicians for dance parties whenever you want? Why are you being such a martyr right now? Can't you be happy for your brother? The remaining son is just as important an example to us as the son who returns. You have two extremes here, and neither of them are great. The younger brother, who spends money like water and bankrupts himself, experiencing the pleasures of the world where no rules apply. And the other brother, who is so tight-fisted, following all these rules that don't exist and martyring himself to these self-imposed limitations. And I'm trying to find examples of this older brother thinking from Christian communities. It's like, I wish I could just take a break and have a mojito on the beach, but I can't. Because my Protestant work ethic is so ingrained in me that I would feel guilty for being lazy. And I certainly can't have alcohol, even though Jesus did, because what if I bump into someone from my church? Or, man, I sure wish I could go to the dance party, but I can't because I'm a Mennonite. And these are minor examples, but I'm sure we could plumb the depths for more and more meaningful ones. So that is one interpretation of the prodigal son. And here's another one. And it takes it further. And I can't take credit for it. I've been reading this book, and I admit I'm only halfway through it. I've had it for like maybe a week. And it's called Get a Hold of Yourself by Troy D. Wilson. And he has a chapter called Home, where he uses the story of the prodigal son to talk about leaving your faith in order to come back to a richer, fuller spiritual life. He grew up going to church and then was like agnostic for a season, and then comes back to it later and becomes a minister. He writes of wandering the wilderness to rediscover your faith, allowing it to shift and to see it from a new perspective when you return, like the prodigal son does. He sees the prodigal son as an example of needing to leave your spiritual home to, quote, come to your senses. He writes, "There are many levels to this story, but ultimately it's about how we all journey home. The son thought his journey to freedom was about going to a faraway land to find heaven on earth, yet his story was about the long journey he had to take through the unknown wilderness to return to the place where he started and see it with new eyes, to discover it was paradise that he'd been looking for all along." And further down, he writes, "I've lost count of the number of people who've told me that they had to leave their Christian faith in order to return to it later on, rediscovering its truth and beauty on a deeper level, to return to where they started and find it was the very home they had been searching for." By contrast, the older son represents clinging desperately to the simple faith of your childhood by following rules and not examining why. And I'll read in Troy's telling, he writes, "For those of you who've never left home, who've never questioned or abandoned your faith or relationship with God, you too might struggle to relate to the prodigal son. Well, the story includes you as well. Unfortunately, you might be the older son who never left, and consequently struggled to fully receive and experience God's love. If your faith is exactly the same as it was when you were a child, you're probably overdue for a walk in the wilderness. So my inner child feels somewhat vindicated. I told you, being the prodigal son is the way better deal.